Welcome to the V&A Podcast, bringing you behind the scenes of the Victoria and Albert Museum, the world's greatest museum of art and design. I'm Glenn Adamson, head of research at the V&A. In this episode, we'll be talking about exhibition design. Everyone knows that the V&A has extensive expertise in design, but that doesn't stop with our collections. We are also important as a client, and among our most important commissions are the settings for our permanent galleries and temporary exhibitions. How do we work with designers to achieve the best possible results? Here to discuss that subject are Moira Gemmel, Director of Projects Design and Estate at the V&A, and Gary Shelley from the design firm Casson Mann, which has worked on several projects at the museum, including our recent blockbuster exhibition, Hollywood Costume. Moira, perhaps I could start with you and ask you just to describe the range of ways that we work with designers at the V&A.
Well, it's very broad-ranging, and that goes back really to the founding principles of the V&A, where it was established as a resource for what we would now call the creative industries, but in those days for craftspeople and manufacturers. So I think it's very important that we engage with as many different designers, established practices, new and emerging designers as we possibly can. And we do that through two means largely, through FuturePlan, working with various different architects in the evolution of the building, the redesign of our galleries, the installation of new architectural interventions that make our buildings work better for our visitor. And of course, we do that through temporary exhibitions, and we work with practices like Casson Mann and with designers like Gary to realise the very best design solutions for our temporary exhibitions.
So Moira, would it be fair to say then that the V&A itself is a designed object in a way, that it's something we're constantly thinking about aesthetically?
Absolutely. And that goes back to the very origins of the V&A, where the buildings were designed by many different architects and engineers and embodied new materials and techniques as a way of promoting design to the manufacturing and craft industries in London and in the UK. And that's something we've very much returned to over the past decade or so.
So Gary, you've just worked with us on this big exhibition, Hollywood Costume, huge success for us last autumn. Can you say a little bit about what it was like to work with the V&A as a client?
Well, it was unusual for us, this particular one, because of for a temporary exhibition, the program was an extended program. So we were involved at the very earliest stages on this project to try and help the V&A define it. It's enjoyable working with the V&A on this side of things because of they have so many departments. You're working with the conservation department, you're working with the curatorial department, you're working with their exhibitions department. So as a big museum, they have a lot of resource.
And sometimes designers, in a way, function as a kind of point of contact between the departments and the V&A. That's something that I've found very interesting. So you become almost like a common conduit for a conversation about the exhibition.
Yeah, I guess because your design is actually setting the plan. I mean, it's not just a physical plan, it's the actual process by which this exhibition will be produced. The ideas that you've come up with are the ones that set that in motion. So you're then specifying the work that the conservators need to do. You're specifying the work that the curators need to do in terms of caption writing. The space that you've created is creating their work, really, for the foreseeable future.
So Moira, maybe we could take a step back to the beginning of that process and maybe walk through what happens in the delivery of an exhibition like Hollywood Costume. Of course, the first thing that needs to happen is that we need to appoint the designer. So can you talk a little bit about how that happens?
In the same way as we appoint all of our designers, whether it's for a major exhibition or a new gallery, we run competitions. And sometimes they're the full-blown Oju process. But with exhibitions, we tend to compile shortlists ourselves. So in consultation with the head of design and with the curatorial staff who are involved in the project, and of course the exhibitions department. And we set a brief for the physical communication of the curatorial narrative that we want to present. And the shortlist, perhaps of five companies, will respond to that brief. And from there, they'll present their ideas and a decision will be made. And I think I should also say that we pay for those concepts. It may be a little bit tokenist, but we do actually pay for those concepts because we fully understand how much time and effort goes into putting those outline concepts together. And it's hugely disappointing for those who don't win the prize.
It's rather like an architectural competition, same model, really.
Exactly the same model.
Right. So that brief is a critical document in the exhibition project as a whole. Can you tell us a little bit about what makes a good exhibition brief?
I think a good exhibition brief is one that explains very, very clearly what the curatorial narrative is trying to achieve and gives a very clear indication of the type of content that will be presented within the exhibition, gives a very clear indication of what sort of constraints there might be in terms of conservation. But I think the most important thing is that we do not set any design standards or try to influence the design of the end product in any way. That's why we want to work with external designers, so that they bring their new and fresh and interesting ideas to the project.
So you leave the design to the designers?
On the whole, yes.
So, Gary, what about Hollywood Costume? What was the brief like for that?
It was a good brief. It was a very detailed brief. It had all the aspects that Moira just explained. But I think one additional aspect it had on it was that it changed our perceptions of the subject, so that the curator was very clear in communicating that. And I think one of the things we grasped onto very early on was that actually, you know, this is an important thing for us to communicate back to the public, this sort of change of perception, this sort of looking at this subject in a new way. And that was one of our key defining features of our response to it, really.
Because the curator, Deborah Nadulman Landis, was a costume designer from Hollywood in her own right.
Yeah.
And she had very strong ideas about, I suppose, putting costume design into the pantheon of design professions.
Yeah. I mean, it was a sort of an invisible profession, really. And to sort of deconstruct it in the way that she did in the brief made it sort of visible to us as actually, you know, these things are design objects and they're quite important to the film. And yet the better they work, the less you see them in a way. So it was that sort of idea that we were trying to communicate.
Because if you notice the costume design, then means you're not
sort of
noticing.
Failed. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it just becomes sort of a theatrical show, whereas actually the costume is about the character and sort of fleshing out and making a character. Really.
So can you give us some examples of design decisions you made in that show that helped communicate that idea?
I guess what was unusual from the beginning from this project was that the objects themselves aren't particularly nice. You know, you can almost guarantee that any other project that the V&A does, they at least have beautiful objects in it, whereas these weren't. And this was explained to us in the brief. You know, they're almost like the castaways of the process. They're the sort of industrial waste from making a film, and then they're generally thrown away. Some people had kept these. And I often compared it to a snake when it sheds its skin. You're kind of left with the skin, which just doesn't look particularly good, but it looked good on the snake. So it was trying to put the snake back into the skin, really, was the biggest challenge, was to make these things alive again. They were only alive on the film. And once they're off the character, once they're out of the film, they became these dead objects. So we really tried to put the life of the film back into the costume.
And those who attended the exhibition will remember this extraordinary effect that you were able to achieve of projecting the actor's face onto the costume itself in a way,
yeah.
So to personify the costume. Can you talk a little bit about what the challenges of that process were?
One of the aspects with the costumes that we felt that they had to be in character, they had to be on a mannequin in some way that was in a pose that was reminiscent of the character from the film. We did a number of exercises where we thought that was enough, actually, that they didn't need a face. You would get it. And I know film pretty well myself. I'd seen most of the films that were in the show. And I did a little exercise at the office where I took all the sort of faces off the costumes and sort of looked at them. And actually, I couldn't tell, you know, actually where these films came from. So we knew we had to put faces back in, I think, to make them recognisable. But also we didn't want to go down a Madame Tussauds sort of route, you know. And also we were talking about cinema, so we wanted the sort of feel of cinema. We wanted a kind of a walk-through film, the sort of texture film, the sort of projection of light. And so really our idea for these sort of projected faces came from those sorts of two strands of one, putting a recognisable character in, and two, trying to express sort of filmness in that sort of sense.
Another thing that people will have been struck by in the exhibition, I think, was the soundtrack, mm-hmm. which had this very kind of theatrical and immersive quality. So the swell of music when you first walked in, and then it really accompanied you all the way through, rather like a soundtrack in a film, in fact.
Yeah.
So how do you work with composers or people who work with sound? Because your work presumably is primarily visual.
Yes. But you're sort of in sort of control of the whole space, whether it's the sound, the vision, everything. So you're working with sort of all consultants on that sort of front. I mean, the difficulty with the soundtrack is that the difference between an exhibition and film, just to sort of state the obvious, is one's a sort of a three-dimensional experience going through to an exhibition, which you can come at from many different directions, whereas a film is a sort of a two-dimensional experience on a linear sort of narrative. So really, the soundtrack on a film sort of helps with that narrative. But if you're coming in at any different point in the exhibition, how do you, you know, build up those crescendos where you might arrive at a crescendo, you know? So we really worked on a soundtrack that could sort of cover the whole space, and the composer really helped with actually arranging the speakers in the space and getting the acoustics to work in that sort of sense.
So, Moira, what did you think of the show Hollywood Costume? Because I had a lot of people say to me, you know, this is something like I've never seen before. This is incredibly innovative, beautiful, a magical experience, really. So it set quite a high bar for us in a way. I wonder what you made of it as a purely design experience.
I think it was an exceptional exhibition in the way that the curatorial narrative came together and how it was physically presented. I really do think it was, as you say, innovative and exceptional. And it's going to make life quite difficult for us from here on in, because we have a very high bar to jump over.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because, you know, working as a curator myself at the museum, on the one hand, you see an exhibition like that and you find it stunning and impressive. And on the other hand, you realize, you know, what a high bar you might have to meet in the future. And part of that, of course, is cost, because it's not cheap to do these things. So how do we balance the costs of an exhibition like that with the experience that we're trying to deliver? Are there ways of doing it on the cheap?
I don't think there are ways of doing it on the cheap, but there are ways of being clever about where our budgets are spent. And I think what we've proved through Hollywood Costume is that there is a great expectation for some sort of digital quality within our exhibitions, rather than simply static displays of objects behind glass, although these are very popular too. But with certain types of exhibition, particularly I think when you're dealing with costume and performance related subjects, it is inevitable that we'll have to figure out a digital element that enhances and brings the whole thing to life. Because as Gary very eloquently described, we are talking about the aftermath of the performance here. I love that analogy with the snake skin. And bringing that back to life, I think, is a very challenging thing to do.
Moira, can I ask you a little bit about the distinction between temporary exhibitions and permanent gallery displays? Because you, of course, look after that for us as part of Future Plan, as you were saying earlier. And of course, a lot of that has to be about the V&A as a building and the history of our architecture. It's a very different approach from what you might see in a temporary exhibition, which is maybe a more isolated theatrical experience as in Hollywood Costume. So how do you think about permanent galleries in a way that might be different from the temporary shows?
Well, I think there's a fundamental difference. Temporary exhibitions run for 3 or 4 months. So they're of the moment. They may tour afterwards, but they're in the V&A for 3 or 4 months. So there's more flexibility there, I think, to take some risks with the design. With permanent galleries, we are designing those galleries for a life of about 25 years. So those galleries need to look as good in 25 years' time as they do on the day they open. And one of the things that is difficult about that is changing styles. So changing styles in graphics that date a gallery, you know, particularly to, I don't know, 1998 or 2004. But the other difficulty is changing technology. And I think that's where it becomes difficult for us. Our visitors, 75% of our visitors have smartphones and they use them. That's an extraordinary number. And we need to recognise that and build on the ability to provide additional information, useful, interesting information in relation to our collections through that means, rather than having lots of hardware that we design or build into our new galleries, which, let's face it, within a few years is going to be, you know, obsolete, out of date and old fashioned. And we can't allow that to happen to our permanent galleries.
Gary, that must be something you at Cass and Mann are thinking about quite a bit.
Yeah. I mean, generally, we always think that it's the content, it's the message, not the media. So if your message is the right message and it's a strong message, whether the media goes out of date, it becomes less important for that because of the public are interested in the message. So we never try and do technology for technology's sake because of that very quickly goes out of date.
All the same, it's definitely providing you with more opportunities as a new palette to work in as a designer.
It's great for that point of view. From an interpretive point of view, it's fantastic. And we're working on a couple of museums or galleries now with sort of hardly any objects in, where a lot of the interpretation is coming through sort of digital media because of it's the place that we're talking about rather than an object. And for the public, it's a very accessible way of learning.
So where do you see exhibition design going in the next few years then? Do you think it's a discipline that's in a process of radical change because of technology?
I think it is changing, whether it's radical or not, because like you said earlier, there's always a budget consideration and that you can't have both with the current budgets. You can't have sort of secure display cases and new media in that sort of sense. Sort of there's a push-pull of that sort of thing. But I think it is changing from that rather dry approach to a much more immersive and sort of exciting and also emotive. I think sometimes, particularly something like Hollywood costume, I think really sort of hit an emotional button with people. They were really engaged and the media helped them engage. They end up learning without necessarily knowing they're learning.
Moira, what do you think about the future of exhibition design from the V&A's perspective? What can you forecast for us at the museum in years to come?
Well, I'd certainly like to see more exhibition design of the standard that we've seen with Hollywood costume. But we will have to change. We are moving the location of our major exhibition programme into a new purpose-built gallery below ground, which will actually give us much, much greater flexibility than we have now. For anyone who knows the V&D, they'll realise that our major exhibitions are set in historic spaces, in three individual rooms with corridors running through them that are really pretty sort of unattractive to the visitor. They're confusing.
It's an extraordinary thing, isn't it? Because
it is.
In a way, they're the great platform for our exhibitions, but in another way, they're shoehorned into this 19th century space in a very awkward manner.
Exactly. And those 19th century spaces are two of them at least, are the most beautiful spaces on the entire site. So when we move to the new...
But you can't see them.
But you can't see them, exactly. Right. They haven't been seen for more than a generation. Mm. So it's a very exciting prospect to move exhibitions into a single unified space with no internal structure so that the space can be redesigned in any way we like without the current constraints that we have. And the knock-on from that is that we'll be able to reveal those amazing 19th century interiors.
Something to look forward to. Gary, can I ask you one last question? I know a lot of listeners out there will have a very strong interest in exhibition design, and some of them may even be thinking they would like to be exhibition designers themselves someday. Do you have any advice for people who want to get into your field?
Well, the traditional way, or the way I went through, was art college and then studying interior design. And from there, into an exhibition design practice. I think you need some sense of spatial design because you're always beginning with a space, whether that's architectural training or interior design training. And then it's that kind of narrative bent, really.
So you learn to be a great storyteller.
Yeah, it's studying the briefs that you're given and finding the underlying story with them and then communicating that spatially. And understanding the spaces you're in as well is sort of key to that.
Gary, I wonder if I could ask you a question. I think there is a very specific discipline in designing for museums, whether it's temporary exhibitions for museums or new galleries. But it isn't recognised at the moment, or there doesn't seem to be a course out there for people to do that specifically. Yeah. Do you think that's something worth pursuing?
Yes. I mean, it's funny because we're doing a couple of projects in France at the moment, and we've now learned our name in France is a sonographer. And it's something that we've never experienced in the UK, being called that. But it is kind of that. It is sort of theatre tricks and magic to help communicate the narrative. And there aren't any courses. There's museum-based courses, and then there's interior design or architecture courses, but there's not a crossover. But I think there's a kind of wider problem with design education in the country at the moment anyway, as to whether a course could survive in that sort of sense in the UK at the moment. We've got a lot of sort of new staff from Italy, actually, that seems to be some of their courses there that bring out designers that are sort of multifaceted, but with that sort of basis, that sort of sound, sort of spatial understanding. You're designing spaces.
Well, great. Thank you very much, both of you. Gary Shelley from the firm Cass & Mann and Moira Gemmell from the V&A. I hope you've enjoyed this walk through the world of exhibition design. Please join us again for the next episode of the V&A podcast, bringing you behind the scenes of the Victoria and Albert Museum, the world's greatest museum of art and design.